and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, and we are doing so on Sunday evening. The NBA finals are set. Joining us to talk about it from Austin, Texas, is Kirk Goldsberry. Hi, Kirk. I hope you're doing well, and I hope you're excited that we are finally in the NBA finals.
I am doing well, and this is fantastic. I'm proud that we're about to have an NBA Finals after all we've gone through, and it looks like it's a great one. Spo versus LeBron. What more can you say, Brian?
No kidding. Not just Spo, the whole Heat organization. And joining us from Los Angeles, where game one of the Finals will virtually be, is Ramona Shelburne. Would have been great to be at Staples for everything this playoffs, but... the last two nights, Ramona, we've seen, you know, new blood, I guess, with LeBron, but old blood with him. But new teams in the finals after the Warriors were there for so long. It didn't surprise us, okay? But new storylines, new blood, a lot of excitement, despite everything that's gone on. A lot of excitement, at least for me, for what's coming up Wednesday night when Game 1 Lakers Heat will begin.
Man, I'm going to make two vows right now. This is the last time that I am going to talk about quote unquote Heat culture. Okay. We've already like jumped the shark on that. Everybody knows about Heat culture. We've been writing about it. And this is also the last time that I'm going to publicly even lament or bring up the idea of how nice it would have been to have a series between Miami and LA flying back and forth between those two cities. Nobody cares about the sports writers, okay, and our whatever restaurants we get to go to. Let's all just make that vow right now. This is the last time we talk about it.
Miami in October is spectacular, by the way, as a former Miami resident.
You're right, it is.
October, November, before the snowbirds come, Miami at its finest.
It's okay. Anytime tonight is okay, but after tonight, we're not talking about it anymore because it's just going to be too painful, and also there are other real problems in the world.
No kidding. The Celtics once again were in position to win this game, game six, as they were for three or so of these games in this series. And once again, the Heat just outplayed them. Mm-hmm. And once again, it was across the board. This time, Bam Adebayo. I mean, he is brilliant. Ooh. He's a brilliant player. You know, his Twitter handle is Bam 1 of 1. And Kirk, I am not going to dispute that. I know that he's sort of Draymond 2.0. I've never seen a player like him.
No.
And he took control of this game in the fourth quarter. And then Tyler Hero with another performance where he rises above his station, his expected station, and has a huge fourth quarter. And, of course, contributions elsewhere. But Bam Adebayo does things that we just haven't seen before. It was too much for the Celtics to handle, and it's going to be a huge challenge for the Lakers, I think, Kirk.
That Bam Adebayo dunk with about 6 minutes and 40 seconds left in this game was awesome and incredible. And I think it was Mark Jackson who just said, you know, what we were just like, oh, my God, okay, this guy's different. Huge moment. Then, you know, Tatum comes down, hits a three, and if you remember, Bam comes back down and hits a little mid-range floater type shot with an and one. And then the next possession down has that sick wraparound pass with his left hand to Jimmy to put them up three. Not only is Bam, I think he led this team in points, rebounds, and assists in this series, but in the middle of this 26-6 run where they put this team down, the Celtics down, he was by far the best player in the game. And those three plays really captured the essence, an explosive dunk, a little finesse touch and an and one in that beautiful left-handed pass to Jimmy that really changed the momentum in this game.
You know what gets me about him, Bri, is just like when you watch him play, you forget like, oh, he's got a handle. Oh, he's a good passer. Oh, he like there's all these other things that Bam can do that when you look at him as just a big or a shot blocker or a defensive stopper or, he's great going downhill. You forget he has all that other game, and it's kind of fun to watch. I mean, 5 years from now, we might be like, oh, he's the best player in the game. I don't know where his ceiling is because I don't think he's there yet.
Yeah, and I also thought that Eric Spoelstra pretty consistently outmaneuvered Brad Stevens in this series. And the lineups that Eric used, it wasn't like a batting a thousand, you know, Stevens had some adjustments, but the lineups that Eric used, the strategies that he put in, he's also got a nice full deck. I mean, he can go down the bench and say, Andre Iguodala, I'm going to play you. You know, they have given him, Pat Riley has given him an extremely deep, versatile team, but he was able to use all of those tools. And in my view, really win that matchup with Brad Stevens. And if you watched what happened in this series, in this game, it kind of was the epitome of it. Brad Stevens couldn't quite get the lineup in that he needed to have in against the Heat. And tonight in this game, he used Grant Williams a little bit more, and that really worked out. But then he took him off the court, and the game changed again. He tried to go super small, but the Heat were able to combat that. I thought Eric Spoelstra acquitted himself incredibly well in this series.
Well, I'm curious what you guys think of that lineup where they had the two snipers out there with Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson on the court together. And I thought, like, at one point in this series, it looked like the Celtics were doing a pretty good job of kind of not letting Bam go downhill, not letting Jimmy penetrate. And when you get those two snipers out there at the same time, I love this phrase that Eric Spoelstra uses. When I was writing a story on Duncan Robinson, he used this story. I don't know if he made it up or he stole it from somebody, but it's a great line. He said, you know, the shooters, they just create gravity on the court. There's a gravitational pull when you have two shooters like that out there. And, you know, Duncan Robinson doesn't put it on the floor as much as Hero does, but they both create a lot of gravity out there that really opened things up for Bam and Jimmy to get into the paint.
And none of those guys are afraid of these moments.
Yeah.
One of the most telling moments of the entire series for me was Eric Spoelstra's coach's interview right before the fourth quarter. And he's just dialed in, and those things are usually super forgettable. But he's like, this is great. Let's just see what happens here. We got toe-to-toe in the center of the ring. So calm and so confident in that moment.
It's so interesting that you remarked on that, because I had a completely different view. And this is somebody who covered Eric Spoelstra for 4 years every day. Spo's an expert at giving non-answers. So Rachel asks him like a question about how are you going to handle, I can't remember exactly what the question was. And he goes, this is just great competition. You know, it was like a non-answer. You know, God, what was the second question? She was asking about something else. And he was like, he's an outstanding player. It was about Jason Tatum or something. He's an outstanding player. It's just he's just a pro at handling that. You know what I thought was interesting also? So Saturday night, Lakers win, and there's confetti.
Yeah.
No confetti for the Heat. And I don't
know that too.
I don't know this yet because the game just ended. I will ask about it. But I will wager that a message was sent from the Heat organization to the NBA. We don't want confetti for winning the conference championship, even though as the five seed and as, you know, everything all considered, like they have earned a celebration. I did notice that. And there was a shot of Spoelstra, you know, while his team is celebrating their congratulating or, you know, showing sportsmanship with the Celtics, and some of the players are hugging each other. And Spo has got that iron face that he always has. And I think that was an organizational move, but it just watching the way the Heat have gone about this postseason. I mean, they're 12-3. I mean, you say that, you know, they're an underdog. It wasn't like they backed their way in here. It wasn't like they, you know, won some games by hitting half court shots, or, you know, eked out a couple of 7-game series, or, you know, took advantage of another player, a star on the other team getting hurt or something like that. They were the better team demonstrably in all three series. They absolutely stormed their way through here. And, you know, it's just, we thought that they were dangerous, but Kirk, I did not see this sort of dominance that was coming. And I really wonder what the matchup is going to look like against the mighty Lakers.
Yeah, I remember I went on Zach's podcast in July before the bubble really started, and we both were like sort of projecting the second round matchup between the Heat and the Bucks, and both were like, oh man, we love the Heat. But I don't think anybody predicted that they were going to run through the Bucks and then get all the way to the finals. But now, like you said, Brian, in retrospect, it's not surprising. They were clearly the better team in all three of these series. And looking forward to this next series, I don't think the Lakers are going to chase them off the court. These guys are not afraid. Pat Riley has built an incredibly tough roster of guys that don't back down. I mean, you know, Momo mentioned the Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson. These guys both played incredible in the fourth quarter to help
get he had them on the court and not Goran Dragic at the end, by the way.
Incredible.
He played, Hero over Dragic, who's been great. Great.
Yeah, I think you're right about Spo having a great, great series. And I would say that there's some great youngish coaches in the Eastern Conference. But Tyler Hero in particular, scoring 11 points in the fourth quarter to help the Heat finish this series. Here's a stat that'll tickle you, Brian. That's the second most by a rookie in the fourth quarter of a series clinching game over the last 20 years. Only Daniel Gibson in the 2007 conference finals had more in a fourth quarter. Well, than that.
I mean, that Daniel Gibson game, which was game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals 2007, LeBron had scored 49 the game 5, 29 of the last 30, and the Pistons predictably were like, look, we're not letting this guy score 50 on us to eliminate us. Daniel Gibson scored 31 points off the bench on 9 shots.
Oh my God.
Still one of the greatest efficiency games of all time. And his Hero was putting up 37 the other night. And we were watching, you know, when we watch games, sometimes we're in Slack channel with our stats group who provides us incredible stats. You wouldn't, we should sell access to that, don't you think?
No, I don't want anyone else to have it. Right. It's so happy when I can just ask things like,
imagine some of the greatest statisticians, you know, in the world with ESPN's database at their fingertips, for playoff games. There's a whole crew of them watching and they're in a Slack channel. But as Tyler Hero was, racking up those numbers, he was passing Daniel Gibson on a bunch of those because that was a classic game, but Hero has backed it up. And I got to say, you know, he's 20. He looks like he's 20. Maybe he even looks like he's 18. When he put that hat on after the game, he looked like he was 16 years old. But no fear whatsoever from him. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Momo, I just want to, before we talk about the Lakers, I want to spend a minute on the Celtics here.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have huge regrets here because, you know, the Heat came back on them several times. They're going to have huge regrets that a zone defense, while very athletic and not your typical zone, caused them so many problems. They're going to have regrets that Gordon Hayward was not at his best. And in this, he looks like he's moving like he's 38 years old. And clearly he's just not right with that ankle. And he did everything he could to get back. They're going to have regrets that Jason Tatum, while he had some great games in the series, went on some disappearing acts. And if you're going to be a player that's going to lead a team towards a championship, you just can't do that. It's a ridiculous standard, and he's not there yet. There's a lot for the Celtics to be frustrated and their fans to be frustrated about the way this series went down.
Yeah, I mean, look, in the fourth quarter, when it's winning time, okay, and I just watched the Lakers last night when LeBron scored 16 in the fourth quarter, all right? 16 in the fourth quarter. That's what that, I mean, and I think the last six of those were unassisted. In other words, he just took the ball to the hole and said, get out of my way. It's winning time. Bam Adebayo did that in the fourth quarter for the Heat. Jason Tatum tried to do that for the Celtics and just couldn't do it. Like, he was trying. And he was trying to be that guy for them, but either he's not that guy or he's not that guy yet. I think he's not that guy yet, but I do think he has it in him. And it's hard because you're a young team, and sometimes when you get there early, you know, we said this a couple of years ago when he faced off with LeBron in the Eastern Conference Finals, just when LeBron was in Cleveland. We were like, wow, just in a couple of years that team is going to be there. But it's like, when's the window? Like, is it now? Do they still have two or three more years to where we say that, you know, they're still so young? Because they really still so are. They're really still so young. But, you know, it's twice now in the Eastern Conference Finals they haven't quite delivered, and they could have.
Yeah, Kirk, I mean, you know, the Celtics have now lost three of the last 4 years they've been in the conference finals. And, okay, two of them are against LeBron. The one they lost in game seven at home. I mean, it's a bitter pill to swallow, even though they're good. But, you know, at some point, you know, they have to take the next step. And Tatum's going to be the half. I mean, because I thought Jaylen Brown played at a very high level.
Yeah.
But it's going to have to be Tatum who takes the next step. And it's a big ask, but he has that room to grow, in my view.
Yeah, I think Tatum is a future superstar. He's one of the most talented, you know, three-level scorers in the league already. He's 22. You know, when I look at this game in this series, the Celtics had a chance to go to the finals. The Celtics were ahead 96-90 with 9 minutes left in game six, and they got blown off the court. And some of the problems we saw in that crucial final stretch sort of echoed for me some of the problems I would associate with previous Celtics teams. They started just settling for jump shot after jump shot down the stretch. They ended up 2-for-13 in the fourth quarter or the final 9 minutes from three-point range, shooting more threes than twos when they couldn't buy a bucket, and just keeping shooting and not taking it to the rack. You know, Jason Tatum is a superstar. He can go get points at the free throw line if he needs to, and they just didn't do that in that most crucial stretch. And the other thing I'd point out is I think some Celtics fans might be frustrated with the bigs rotation. And you said it earlier, Brian, just not really landing on the right lineup, particularly up front with, you know, with Grant Williams. Robert Williams probably could have played more. Enes Kanter probably could have played yet less. Daniel Theis, you know, you look at this team, obviously Tatum, Brown, and Kemba are going to be out there. Marcus Smart's going to be out there. But that last spot, you know, they looked like they were still experimenting down the stretch in game six. So I think they will have some regrets about how they performed, particularly in the end of these close games. And but that said, they're pretty well stocked for the future. They got a good coach. They obviously
had a hole at center. I mean, they would argue probably that wasn't a hole because they thought Theis is so – he does so many things very well, and he is. They elected – or weren't able to address that position during the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had some rabbits they could have pulled out of the hat. You know, I remember, my God, it's like 10 months ago now, but I remember analyzing this within their organization about what possibly they could do, because there's a certain number of guys who are untouchable. And Gordon Hayward is in that group. There was some thought that at some point that, you know, he could have been traded. That was not on the table for this year. So it wasn't like a dereliction of duty, but they went into this, you know, at the trade deadline, they made the choice not to get to, you know, do anything. And, you know, they were hoping for some guys to get bought out. Tristan Thompson was a guy that they were hoping to get bought out, as an example, and it just didn't happen. And they didn't have an opportunity. But, I mean, that was a personnel issue that Brad Stevens tried to overcome throughout the year, because Brad Stevens wants athletes on the court, but that they were not able to overcome. And, you know, to sign Kemba Walker, they let Aron Baynes go, or they traded him. And, look, I'm not trying to say that if they had Aron Baynes that this would have been a different result, because I'm not sure that, you know, there was a guy out there I could say go get and that would mean that they could have slowed down Bam Adebayo. But they may not have had the personnel quite that they ideally needed. And you can do things right for a really long time, but you, in situations like this, your weaknesses always show up.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, the other thing, like, you know, Kemba, for as great as Kemba is, and for as much of a resume as he has of hitting big shots, there are times when Kemba struggles at the end of the games because he doesn't always have the size to pull it off. And so Kemba tried to carry this team down the stretch of this game, and he just wasn't able to do it. And it's, he can do it. His batting average is kind of low. So you have to have others who can step up. And in this case, it just didn't happen. So I think they will be back, but I also think that they left some stuff on the table.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
The Lakers did what nobody could do, which was finally beat the Nuggets. And I have to say, my big takeaway from the series, because I'm still not 100% over what happened to the Clippers, Ramona.
Yeah.
And I take nothing. I mean, the Nuggets just ran out of gas. By the way, you want to hear something crazy about the Nuggets? Do you know they had a losing record in the playoffs?
That's right. Yeah, you're right.
They were 9-10.
9-10. Yeah.
While they were amazing, and we all enjoyed watching them, and their two comebacks were just spiritual, and Jamal Murray just did some amazing stuff, and Jokic is one of the most enjoyable guys in the league for me to watch. They were a losing team in the postseason. But what I couldn't help myself from thinking about, Ramona, was I think the Lakers would have slapped the Clippers. Ooh. They couldn't slap them on Christmas.
Yeah.
They couldn't slap them, you know, back at the start of the season. But what the Lakers did to the Nuggets after what the Nuggets did to the Clippers removed any, I didn't really have any lingering doubt, but
I don't know. Okay. And I say this with all due respect to the Lakers. I think they've just been locked in, but you know, they lose one game a series, you know, and it's, you know, sort of a gentleman sweep each time. The biggest issue with the Clippers was that they just didn't have that energy and spirit. Well, what would have got them that energy and spirit? I mean, playing against the Lakers. I don't know. I mean, I'm not willing to go that far to say that they would have slapped them. I think they would have beat them. I picked them the whole year. Like I was one of those who just but my analysis came down to, okay, 7-game series. It's going to be Lakers Clippers. Who do I think wins? I thought the Clippers had the better team, but I thought the Lakers had the two best players, or the better duo, just in terms of LeBron and AD. Who do I trust more? I think I still trust LeBron and AD more. And I just never got off that you know, fundamental. Here's why you pick them. I don't know, man. The Clippers, they would have got up for that series.
Would they?
Yeah, that's the fundamental question, isn't it? That's what you gotta figure out. Yeah.
You know, I have to say, the all-encompassing series that LeBron played. I mean, he's got dozens of these types of series, but doing that, it was breathtaking. It was breathtaking to watch him do what he was doing,
especially defensively, man. I mean, we've always known he can take over games, right? Right. I mean, he can do that. That's LeBron. But the defensive effort he's been giving all year long, not just you know, picking and choosing, that's what's really stood out, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, you want to know the difference between sort of sophomore level class and not even doctorate. What's above doctorate academic, Goldsberry?
I don't know.
Like, Meredith.
Nobel Prize for physics versus, you know, sophomore year chemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there was a Nobel Prize for basketball, I think we know who would get it.
Okay. Well, so Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum is in second year. Okay. LeBron, in the fourth quarter, as he's dropping the hammer to go to the finals, Ramona, he's not even breathing hard. He's not even breathing hard. It was amazing.
Well, I mean, you know, just watching him sit there at the end of the game with the confetti falling down. Okay. That was something I took note of too tonight, Brian, when we didn't see the confetti with the Miami Heat. Right. But LeBron sitting there with that 1,000-yard stare, and I think Tanya Ganguly from the LA Times asked him this question, you know, what were you thinking about? And he just said, you know, I was thinking about everything it took to win this series. This is a really hard fought series. Everything that it took for us to get here. I was thinking about my teammates who haven't been here before. I was thinking of Anthony Davis, you know, who is why, you know, I helped bring him here. And then I was thinking about just my own journey and what this means. I mean, it was like eloquent. It was amazing just the way he was able to put all of that into perspective. And I, you know, it kind of got me thinking, like, you know, 1 year ago today, the Lakers opened media day. And on a season that is still going on, it's amazing. It's been a whole year since that last media day. And at the time, we thought the hardest thing LeBron had to do was, you know, resurrect the Lakers. Right? It's this team that had missed the playoffs 6 years in a row, and he was coming off the most serious injury of his career. You know, Magic Johnson had left the front office and reputation in tatters. Like, we thought that was going to be a big challenge. Look at all the other stuff this man has carried that franchise through this year. And to be playing at this level, and this is what we talk about with aging stars. Like, you know, usually by the time that you have the basketball IQ that LeBron has, your body gives out on you, and you're not able to execute physically what your mind now sees. It's this sort of cruel twist of fate with, you know, with the aging process. He, for however long he can stay in this place where his body can still match what his mind is seeing and feeling, we should all just sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's really well said. That's really well said. Kirk, I wanted to talk a little bit about what the matchup would look like. I've actually spent the last couple of days texting with a handful of NBA coaches about what the Lakers should do when the Heat go to zone and what that's going to look like, because that's an interesting matchup. As someone who maps the floor, your Nobel Prize mapper, yeah, floor mapper,
I love it.
What do you think that's going to look like? Because I could see that being one of the major things that is a factor in this series.
Well, I mean, the good news is they have two incredible playmakers who have rich playoff experience, who I think are savants. And Rondo is the second one. I think LeBron is the first one. But Rajon Rondo has been carving up defenses and getting his teammates the right looks at the right times in ways that I never thought I'd see again from him. And I'm not going to make this answer about Rondo, but let's just say they have this other guy besides one of the greatest playmakers in the history of the league in LeBron James. When it comes to being shrewd and being smart and making plays in the center of that zone, I also think Anthony Davis is a pretty nice luxury to have there at the nail in the middle of that zone. So, you know, the Celtics, again, that lack of a bigger playmaker to put in the middle of the teeth of the zone, I think revealed itself as a big weakness for them. I don't think the Lakers have that weakness. That said, they have their own issues with shooting the basketball outside of the paint. And when I look at,
especially in the half court offense,
and when I look at the series, that's where I'm really curious to see if the zone is the priority of Miami or if simply keeping Anthony Davis and LeBron James out of the paint is their priority and making them beat them with jump shots. Because that, if you can effectively turn those two guys into jump shooters, you greatly reduce their damage on that side of the court. Good luck. Easier said than done. But if you can do that, you got a chance.
Well, in talking to the coaches, the head coaches, a couple of things emerged. Number one, and I think this is kind of general zone strategy, but especially against the Heat, to use was one guy's verbiage, you've got to probe the baseline. Because the way that the Heat play, they a lot of times bring their most athletic guys up front, and they kind of hide Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson in the corners. And so what this one guy was saying was like, look, you don't take the first decent shot. Be patient and definitely probe that baseline. Another thing, and this is what Laker fans have gotten used to, is just run. You know, Ramona, it's so interesting. The way the Lakers play up-tempo was the way Luke Walton wanted to play up-tempo last year with Lonzo Ball and pushing the tempo and LeBron pushing the tempo. And they do push the tempo amazingly. I mean, after made baskets, I mean, they were beating the Nuggets back on made baskets. Like Jamal Murray would drive in, make a great layup, and he'd be under the basket, and his man was already, you know, 60 feet down the floor, you know, after made baskets. If Miami can't set up the zone, they can't defend you. So that's another thing that they said, is you stick with that high volume or that high speed transition play.
Yeah. I mean, Kurt makes a really good point about just keeping them out of the paint. Right. And nobody knows how to defend LeBron probably better than Eric Spoelstra, coaching for so many years. He knows all the strengths and weaknesses. The biggest thing, though, is LeBron's a better player than he was in Miami. I mean, in a lot of ways, he was more athletic in Miami. He could do other things. But, Brian, I don't know. I've seen some evolution in his game since then. And so that would be pretty ironic if he ends up, you know, beating the Heat by proving that he actually – can shoot. And he's been shooting okay this, you know, more than you know, early stage.
Well, his 3-point shooting was pretty sluggish, but it picked up at the end of the series.
Yeah.
But you're still going to play the percentages. It's what the Detroit Pistons did 15 years ago. And it's not as effective.
Yeah.
But it's still the way you play. It's what the Spurs did in the 2007 finals. You know, the other thing is, you know, the Heat, they've got 8 or 9 guys they can use. You know, Andre Iguodala, who, by the way, was 7 of 27 on 3-point shooting in the playoffs coming into Game 6. He goes 4 of 4 on threes. They have, you know, Jay Crowder, and they have Iguodala, and they have Jimmy Butler. They have some, like, look, none of those dudes are going to stop him. LeBron has played against Iguodala dozens of times in the playoffs, and he has some tremendous games against him. But they do have a depth that Denver and Houston did not. Whether or not that makes a difference, I don't know, but that is they do have that on their team.
And it seems like they also have like a really strong team concept on the defensive side of the ball. And if you have to look at this current Lakers run, you mentioned how they didn't play the Clippers. They played the Blazers, the Rockets, and the Nuggets. And I know the Rockets were a nice sort of defensive story there for a minute, but this is by far the best complete team defense they will face in this run. Denver was one of the worst playoff defenses in the bubble, period. So it'll be interesting to see. And that play that I can picture in my head, Brian, where you say, you know, after a make, they were throwing the ball down and getting these easy layups against the Nuggets. Those kinds of things, I think, will disappear against the Eric Spoelstra team. And it'll be interesting to see if they have to execute in the half court, if the Heat can effectively reduce the open floor nature of this series. Will this Lakers offense look as sharp as it did against Denver? I think that's a big question.
So how do you suppose the Adebayo, how will the Heat use Adebayo? Do you use him against Anthony Davis? You know, how do the Lakers defend Adebayo? I think what he can do is a challenge that, you know, he's not better than Anthony Davis at this point, but he presents things that are, you know, Jokic brings his own set of challenges, and I thought the Lakers on balance did a pretty good job there. How do you think, Ramona, they handle Adebayo? Because that is a that is going to be another major point in the series.
Look, I mean, Anthony Davis finished second in Defensive Player of the Year vote, right? A lot of people think he should have won. I had a second behind Giannis, but if you really are that guy, then you're going to raise your hand and say, "Give me Adebayo," right? Right? You're good. Like, that's Anthony Davis' assignment, and I think the question is, does Bam defend Anthony Davis on the other side, or do you leave that for Jay Crowder? Do you leave that for somebody else so that Bam doesn't get in foul trouble? I know Anthony would, I mean, I feel like Anthony would just drive on him and try to get him in foul trouble all the time. The Lakers are pretty successful at getting Jokic in foul trouble with the way they played against him. So
Jokic had, for a guy who's one of the smartest guys I've ever seen, Jokic had some brain dead fouls. And I know that there was all kinds of complaints about the officiating, but Jokic could have had 9 fouls in game 5.
Yeah, that just looked to me to be fatigue. That was just desperation and fatigue, and I'm reaching, and I'm, you know, that he's better than that. I agree with you. So I don't know. That's an interesting question as we go forward. My other question is, can Iguodala still stay with LeBron? I mean, he's done it before.
That's why the zone, you know, if you play zone, it's not man on man, it's group on group. And they're so, you know, the Heat are in such great condition, which is a calling card of their organization, that they can play high energy zone for whole quarters. And it's just, you know, the Celtics just had a problem. They just were not comfortable. And you know, you learn how to break a zone when you're in sixth grade, ninth grade. You know, it's not schematically that different. It's not a revolutionary defense. There's a reason why NBA teams stopped using it. It was outlawed for a long time, but because usually it can be mathematically handled with skill, but the Heat battle that math because of how aggressive they are and how multi-talented they are. And they've got a couple of guys who are just really smart and really good. And even, like, you know, you say that a guy like Hero and Robinson are the weak spots. And of course I agree. If LeBron James gets into space against Tyler Hero, he's going to make mincemeat of him. But Hero and Robinson are always in the right place at the right time. Even if they get outplayed, they're in the right place at the right time. And so that's something that goes a long way and seemed to fluster the Celtics at times. So I would imagine that the Lakers, after they celebrate and they begin their practice, I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of zone practice as they get ready for that, because it's not something that you see a whole lot. And interestingly, the Lakers use some zone against the Nuggets, but the Heat are such a good three-point shooting team. I wonder if that will happen.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Now, Brian, I got a question for you. I know it's your podcast, but I'm going to turn it around on you since you're probably the best one to answer this. For a lot of years after LeBron left Miami, he wasn't all that good against the Heat, right? He either didn't play them or he wasn't that good.
Yeah, he kind of avoided games in Miami, if I could be honest.
Yeah, was it always just in Miami, or was it like when the Heat came to Cleveland? Like, what what was that dynamic about, and where does it stand now?
Well, look, so when LeBron left Miami, I've talked to three or four people who were on this flight. There was like maybe eight or nine people on this flight. I've talked to three or four of them. LeBron is in Las Vegas for his camp. Ramona, you're there.
Oh, yeah. Dwayne Wade just showed up in the gym. And we were like, Dwayne Wade?
I was in Bristol. You were in Vegas. LeBron meets with the Heat. The Heat get the last meeting in Vegas. Nobody knows anything. I mean, obviously the people knew, but LeBron does the interview with Lee Jenkins before he leaves. He gets on the plane and takes the Nike jet from Las Vegas to Miami. Dwayne catches a ride, and you know what he was doing was he was making a pit stop where he was going to sign his contract with the Cavs, and then he was going to Rio de Janeiro for the World Cup for a Nike appearance. That's why the Nike jet was taking him there. But it was like, wait a minute, LeBron's flying to Miami with Dwayne Wade after meeting with the Heat. And so the crazy thing about it is, now remember, this is like on July 7th or 8th. The free agent market is kind of frozen, but there had been some moves. The Heat still think they've got a really good chance. The Cavs were a little bit in the dark. They were feeling better and better. There were people in Cleveland who knew, but the Cavs hadn't heard it from Rich Paul or LeBron, so they were skittish. He flies across the country with Dwayne and is editing the Lee Jenkins essay on the flight. LeBron is looking at drafts of it on the flight and does not tell Dwayne until after they land. So the next day, LeBron calls Pat Riley and informs him that he's going to Cleveland. And Riley, in his own words, he didn't describe it in that moment, but over the subsequent years, was furious, like rage, and rage that he waited so long and, you know, the Heat were out of position. They almost lost Chris Bosh. They were able to salvage it, and they signed Lou Aldang as well. Rage that he felt like he was making a horrible mistake, that a dynasty, that they were, you know, that he thought they could win four or five titles, that, you know, they had a setback year, but it was no reason to take the first door, to use Riley's words. LeBron later said that his motivation for winning a title in Cleveland, I don't know if this is 100% accurate. I think his motivation for winning a title in Cleveland was probably a lot more than just making the Heat feel this way. But he said that when he left Miami, that someone with the Heat told him he was making the worst mistake of his career. Pat Riley has, and he said that was his motivation for the whole thing. Pat Riley has denied that he said that to him. I don't know what's true with that. I will just take Pat at his word. But there's no doubt that Pat Riley thought LeBron was making a terrible mistake. Whether he articulated it or not, or who LeBron heard that from, I don't know. So there was frostiness there, as you would imagine, you know, a guy walking away in free agency like that. I was always amazed that there was not more frostiness with Dwayne Wade, because Dwayne opted out of his contract alongside LeBron, not knowing what LeBron was going to do. And then when the Heat re-signed him, because he had had so many injuries and because they needed money elsewhere, they signed him to a much lower contract. And he had opted out of 2 years of that contract, because this was after 4 years. And basically they signed 5-year contracts with an opt out and an opt in, so that they had the choice to make the contract 4, 5, or 6 years. But when LeBron opted out, so did Bosh and Wade, and Dwayne ended up signing for like less money. I think it cost him around $10 million. And while they are friends and they won titles together, Ramona, you and I are friends. If you cost me $10 million, I might be a little cross with you.
Yeah. Look, I asked Wayne about this once. I was doing a story on Kevin Durant, and I just sort of asked him, you know, what it's like when a guy leaves a city like that. And I said, what was it like on that flight? You know, did you have literally a 5-hour flight to convince your best friend to stay? And he said, I never said come back, not once. I'm reading to you a direct quote, okay? Once I knew he made up his mind, I said, it was fun, wasn't it? Now go do what it is LeBron wants to do. I'll support you either way. And I said to him, I wrote back to him, I said, it must have been hard because you knew what it would do to the team. And Dwayne said, not many that's built like me. Not a lot of people could have done that. But my life wasn't made off what LeBron could do for me. So it was easier. I just appreciate our friendship. Everything else is a bonus.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm fine. I totally understand him appreciating what they had together. But they remained incredibly close friends after that. Okay. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying I'm surprised. So, it was a lot of hard feelings. And even though I feel like LeBron going to Cleveland, where he thought there was a better short-term future and made more sense for him, wasn't all that different than Pat Riley leaving the Knicks for the Heat. Pat Riley did what he had to do, and you know, LeBron did what he had to do. So Riley and LeBron have really never buried the hatchet, as far as I know. They didn't communicate for years. And then when LeBron won the championship, Riley sent him a text, and LeBron did not return it.
Ooh. Ooh.
Then there was some other stuff like, you know, Riley was getting ready for the draft the following year, and he took a swipe at LeBron for, you know, the previous year. He had talked about how much he liked Shabazz Napier. And he goes, yeah, this year we don't have any smiling faces with hidden agendas, which, and then when they played the video tribute, I'm pretty sure this is accurate. I don't hold me 1,000% to this, but I'm pretty sure when they played the video tribute, when LeBron came back to Miami, that Riley didn't stand or something like that. I don't know. That was perceived as a slight or whatever. So this wasn't Dan Gilbert. But there's a level of, you know, pettiness there. And like, it's not like Pat Riley is like, oh, I really wasn't going to care about these finals. You know, I've got a bunch of rings. Whether we win or lose, it's fine. Oh, it's against LeBron. Well, I got to get him, you know. He wants to win the finals. What, no matter who he's playing, he wants to win. I do think that it spices it up a little bit, but Pat Riley is not playing.
Okay. This is a fun one that our ESPN stats and info people just sent over. Pat Riley has reached the finals in 6 straight decades. The 1970s as a player, 1980s and 90s as a coach, and the 2000s, 2010s, and now 2020s as an executive.
Well, he was there as a coach in the 2000s, too.
Yep. So, yeah. I mean, I'm just, like, not that we deserve anything. Okay, I think what 2020 has taught us is that we don't deserve anything and nothing to be entitled. We don't even, we're just lucky to have basketball. I mean, Kurt, you know, when we first got on this call, I was just like, it's just amazing we're here, right? Isn't it amazing we're here to have an NBA Finals conversation? But we get the Lakers and the Heat in the finals? We get the Lakers in the Heat in the finals. This is great, guys.
Before we leave Riley behind, I think it's incredible that how hard it is to get to the finals. This is an organization that had the big three in the 2014 finals against the Spurs. Those guys are all gone. Bosh is gone. Wade is gone. LeBron is obviously gone. And they're back with a brand new team 6 years later.
And boom,
they did not make the playoffs last year.
It's incredible, though. I mean, come on. Do you know how hard?
Neither did the Lakers.
Well, you know what? It's kind of amazing. We were doing stats last night. I was, you know, digging stuff up. Okay, so I grew up in L.A. People who grew up in L.A. just expect the Lakers to be in the playoffs every year. And if they miss it 1 year, it's like a big deal. They've missed it 6 years in a row. Okay, so the last time the Lakers were in the finals, this stat just blew my mind. Okay. 2010, last time they were in the finals. If you just take away the last 10 years, right? Because it's been 10 years since they were in the finals. The Lakers were in the finals every other year. 32 appearances in 64 years. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and, you know, the history is interesting for the fans. It doesn't give them a 1-0 lead, but Think of 10 years, you know, think of 10 years.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone in the Heat organization recently because the Heat are a fun team. I think they're a fun team.
Yeah.
I mean, at ESPN, like you went to Miami and did a big piece on Duncan Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Lowe did a big piece on Bam Adebayo. I've written three or four big pieces on the Heat this year.
So the last night we were allowed to talk about Heat culture. So get it all in.
Well, I'm not even that. Just they're a very interesting and fun team.
They are. Yeah.
And 10 years ago, they were absolutely hated.
Yep.
Hated.
Right.
And it's just such a, you know, and they were the ultimate favorite, the overdog. Now they're an underdog and really, I think, appreciated by a lot of people. If you like basketball and you're neutral, I find it hard to believe that you don't like watching the Heat.
Yeah, they're the anti-super team, Brian. Like in the era of, and I know they got Jimmy Butler, and that's no small signing. But look at the other guys are all homegrown, a lot of cast-offs. It's a player development story. Ramona, I'm allowed to say it's a culture story today.
Last night.
But there's a lot to like in an era where these super teams are going head-to-head, whether it's the Clippers or the Lakers or whatever, that this team sort of came together a different way and got to the same place. And I think that's why a lot of people really love it. And Pat Riley, again, to Ramona's point, this guy has been in our lives my whole life following the league. This guy has been relevant. And here he is again with this brand new look. And this is his fourth different team that, like, you think about the Showtime Lakers and the physical Knicks and then the Big Three Heat. This is a very different team, too. And it just speaks to how many different ways this guy has gotten to the top of the NBA mountain. It's remarkable.
Well, just think about this guy has had Kareem Abdul. Just think of his centers. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Patrick Ewing, Alonzo Mourning, Shaquille O'Neal, Chris Bosh, Bam Adebayo. That's just the centers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talk about, you know, think about the era change that you talk about in that, just in naming those names. It's incredible. And again, Pat's not playing, but the players sort of wear his initials on their chest. And you know who else does too? LeBron. Even though LeBron doesn't consider Riley a friend, and it was a business relationship, and Pat wanted so badly to build a bond there, and it did not happen. And that's what Pat is upset about more than anything, is that normally when Pat goes to bond with players, he does it. You know, I mean, it didn't go so well with Shaq, but that was sort of an arranged marriage that was forced. I mean, he traded for him. He didn't sign there. It wasn't a recruitment effort.
And I do want to talk about this. It's something I wrote last week, but that's not how LeBron rolls. Like, he doesn't necessarily build bonds with the GM or the executive or the owner. Like, he historically has kind of kept that distance. And I think there's a strategy to that too. You know, you let your agent handle that. But also, you don't open that door. That means they don't go around your agent to get directly to you and to use the personal charm and to use any kind of personal connection. Like, you don't, you know, if you don't open the door, they can't walk through it, right? They can't go through the back door. And
if you want to talk turkey,
yeah,
there's 5 to 8 people. I mean, I'm going to take out immediate family members because obviously there's like 5 to 8 people in LeBron James' life, and they've all been there for 20 years, most of them, and if not 20, 10. If you're not into that 5 to 8 people, you are interchangeable to him. Now, it doesn't mean that he won't try to win with you. It doesn't mean he won't put his arm around you. It doesn't mean that he won't invite you to his Halloween party. It doesn't mean he won't get you paid. It doesn't mean he won't go to the hookah lounge with you, which apparently LeBron likes to do, he revealed last night.
That was fun.
Play cards with you. But if it comes down to it, LeBron will send flowers, okay? And if you don't believe me, ask Dwayne Wade about that, okay? And Riley rolls like that too, except for he likes, because remember, when push came to shove, Tim Hardaway walked, Alonzo Mourning walked, he traded Shaq, He let Dwayne Wade walk. It ended poorly with Chris Bosh, although that wasn't Riley's fault. Riley is not afraid to send flowers himself. Now, the bonds that they built, you know, Hardaway, Mourning, even Shaq came back, Wade came back, even Bosh. It was post-game tonight. Spo shouting out the people in Heat culture, and he shouts out Alonzo Mourning and Shane Battier and Riley and Mickey Arison and Dwayne Wade, and he shouts out Chris Bosh. Oh, wait a minute, we're missing somebody. I mean, he obviously can't shout out his opponent, but but like it was like, this is for you, Dwayne, and you, CB. Oh, what? You know, what, there's a missing name there. You know, part of the reason that Riley and LeBron don't get along great is because they're so much alike.
But I will say this.
That's an inconvenient truth.
It's an inconvenient, but I think something different's happening with LeBron in LA. I don't know. It could just be his golden years where he wants to end up, where he's going to end his career, right? And he signed a longer term deal here than they ever did in Cleveland. But
that's right. LeBron signed for more years in Miami and LA than he ever gave Dan Gilbert.
Gilbert.
It's just true. What do you want me to say? It's just true.
I don't know if you caught this last night. I don't know if anybody, you know, like on the Instagram stories like I tend to be, but Ron put up a picture of Jeannie Buss. It was her birthday last night. And it was like them in this very cute embrace at the ugly sweater party. And he was like, happy birthday, boss. Right after they win. And, you know, this is after, you know, they've had a pretty nice relationship, more than I would say he's ever had with another team owner. That's been the hallmark of the Buss family ownership when it comes to players.
Ramona, I'm telling
you, players,
I'm
right?
not saying today and I'm not saying tomorrow. It may never happen, okay?
Uh-huh.
But if it comes down to it, he'll send flowers. And you don't believe me? Don't believe me.
Okay.
I'm telling you, that's how the man
see,
rolls.
We'll see. Let's see how the next, not just finals go, but the last few years of his career here.
It may not be necessary.
Yeah.
It may not be necessary. I'm just saying. And you know what? He'd send flowers to the organization, and he's gonna spend the next 2 weeks trying to cut their throat.
Ooh.
And he'll say nice things about them, but he's going to try to cut their throat. That's just the way it's going to be. And you know what? We wouldn't want it any other way. We wouldn't want it any other way.
Man, I'm excited. You guys got me excited about this series.
But again, at the end of the day, Kirk, it's not LeBron versus Pat Riley. I mean, that's an exciting thing
to
talk about.
I'm almost into the spiciness of this. This is exciting now.
Listen, I want to know who's guarding Tyler Hero.
Oh,
who's
I know you do.
Goran Dragic?
I'm going to go read all 8,000 million words of Wright Thompson's Pat Riley story from a couple of years ago. I'm going to go reread it. I'm going to go dig up some fun, spicy stories because this is a good matchup. I like it.
Well. I hope it's going to be fun. I'd like to see it not be five games like the other Lakers series. I'd like to see it be a test. And Kirk, I think you're right. I think the Lakers, this will be a different test than they've had.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Miami is a five seed is really irrelevant because mm-hmm. when they came back, they did not play like a five seed. So
no, both these teams are 12-3 in the playoffs. And you could argue that Miami had a tougher road. Do not sleep on this Miami squad.
Well, I'll say that the Lakers would have been favored anyway. Vegas always favors the Lakers because they get all the LA fans who just bet with their hearts, you know, and they take a bunch of people's money. That's the Vegas thing. But I feel less confident picking the Lakers in this series than I have in any other round that I've picked them. And I've picked them every single series they've been going and dating all the way back to the preseason, but this feels like a good matchup for a good finals matchup.
I'll say this: I was talking to somebody, or maybe I was listening to some. I wasn't talking to him. I was listening to somebody or reading somebody say, but you know, this was one of LeBron's most dominant runs through the playoffs. He's been 12-3 or better five times
Jeez.
Into the finals.
Jeez. Okay?
So, the man's resume. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. Okay. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you for staying up late, Troy, back in Connecticut. Thank you to Kirk. Thank you to Ramona. It is our plan, and I hope Andrew Hahn doesn't get mad at me for saying that, as we did last season, It is our plan to podcast after every single finals game. We had some incredibly spicy ones last year, and we will strive to do that again, although we are not on site, unfortunately, but that's reality. So thank you for listening to this podcast. We look forward to talking to you after game one, game two, game three, etc. Hopefully all the way up to seven. Have a great week. Happy finals.